This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. The elections are coming up here in just a matter of weeks here in Northwest Indiana and elsewhere in Indiana, for that matter. And if you're interested in finding out more about the elections approaching and the candidates and the like, well, there's a website you can go to, and our guests in the studio right now will tell us more about it. The website, the national website, I should say, is vote411.org. That's the name of the website. And the League of Women Voters Education Fund established that several years ago. And now we have a local version of the National 411 Project here in Northwest Indiana. With us in studio to talk about it is Sarah Ferraro and Terry Weems. They're both with the League of Women Voters of the Calumet area. In fact, Terry does a lot of specific work with candidate outreach for that particular part of the project. And also with us, Miranda Fishback. She is with the Legacy Foundation. Her title is Community Engagement Coordinator. So she is working very closely on this project as well. Ladies, thank you for joining us on the program today. I'll toss it over to you and tell us how you get started here to explain what the Vote 411 project is all about and how to fit in here in Northwest Indiana in particular.
Sure. Thank you, Chris, for having us. And thank you, Lakeshore, for letting the citizens know more about this awesome project. Yes, it's a national part of the League of Women Voters of the U.S. We have brought it here to the Lake County since 2018. This is our third general election, our third election building this for Lake County. So basically, it's a one-stop shop. If you go on the site, you can put in your address and see who's on your ballot. And then in partnership with RISE, Northwest Indiana, and the League of Women Voters, we build a candidate survey that goes out to all candidates, and they get an opportunity to answer questions that are in on the site.
What seemed to be the impetus for getting this created was the fact that you could never find any specific one place where you could find, if not all the information, at least most of the information that somebody who is interested in the candidates, interested in the election, wants to know before they have to go to the election polls to actually cast their.
I think it's exactly like what you just said. There are sites out there or places where you can see through the Secretary of State who's on your ballot, but not necessarily their views or some things that the candidate wants to say. So this is exactly a one-stop shop. Like we're saying, you can see where and when to vote. The National League plugs in polling places. And there's just a variety of information on there. Plus, that we can upload debates or forums that happen locally or nationally. It's an amazing website. And they've retooled the website. They spent the league nationally, remarketed it, and it's amazing. It's a lot flashier. So.
And I would just like to add, back in 2018, over the summertime, RISE NWI, we spent a lot of time at summer festivals and parades, and we talked to a lot of Lake County residents, and we asked them, do you vote? And if you don't, why don't you vote? And one of the big responses we did get was, I feel like I'm better off not voting because I don't know who's on my ballot. I don't know what these candidates are really standing for. So my vote is better left unresponded just because I don't know who's on my ballot. And that was really one of the main reasons why RISE NWI reached out to the League and we formed this partnership because the League of Women Voters has a wonderful website, which is the vote411.org website. And we really wanted to bring that locally because back in 2018, there really was not that local, easy-to-use source that people can go to.
And I'm glad Miranda said local because, Chris, it really is all about – there's so many sources that people can find for national information. But here for our county, for our local elections, whether all the way down to school board, those are the folks that we're reaching out to that we want more people to get to know and the candidates to be engaged with us. So
these are probably sources too, aside from the big ones like you can expect out there. When you Google Ballotpedia, you're going to get this big Wikipedia style tailored to specific to elections, but you're going to get a lot of things there, and you might not get any specific information about a local candidate. And Terry, did you, in working with, in turn, this outreach as a candidate outreach is what I understand your role is doing with on this project with the League, did you have opportunities to talk more with candidates, try to get specific information that in turn will go into this this big database, so to speak?
Yes, I've contacted a number of candidates, approximately 80 within the last week.
Wow.
All over Lake County. And I find that they are very receptive in being able to give us information so that we can get it out on the site. Mm-hmm. And I find that the site is helpful because we are into social media more so than the public radio, and not the radio, but
or just the overall media, I imagine, yeah.
Whatever. Exactly. So it becomes real easy for people to find that information. I know I've gone on government sites before, and then you have to kind of like search specifically for this, that, and the other, where with us you put in your personal information and you're able to get that without a problem.
I know that certainly in elections past that a lot of residents have turned to like the Times and the Post Tribune because they would devote the space in print as well as online to talk about the candidates, about just general election information. And you feel this kind of follows maybe along with that, or maybe makes it more easy to access for somebody that just wants to find out, go on the computer and find out more information about a candidate? Does
yes.
it seem to work out better that way, or does it work in hand with what is already out there?
It one complements the other.
Yeah.
One complements the other.
And I think, you know, the Times has a wonderful candidate survey that they reach out to the candidates and they ask for their participation. And we do ask very different questions opposed to the Times. And I think, you know, go to both. Go to the Times' website. Go to our website. Go to vote411.org and see, you know, the different questions and have a very well overview of your candidates. And just to really reiterate, going to vote411.org, you just see your information. You type in your address, and you're only seeing those candidates that will be on your ballot when you mm-hmm. go to the polls.
Do you think that with this municipal election, cities and towns both, this will make it a lot easier for people who are interested in knowing ahead of time before they go to the polls who's out there? If they're not already aware of the candidates, they can be able to focus in, zero right into these people almost to a precinct, I would imagine, that you get that basic information. And this is certainly going to help next year in the next general election, the primary elections ahead in 2022, I would imagine.
Absolutely.
And I think one thing through the work that Terry's doing with the outreach, we're building relationships with these folks that are running for office, whether they're currently in office or seeking the office. And that's just helping all of us and our organizations all around. So we're reaching out to them. We're encouraging them to be more engaged with citizens and just hoping that they will utilize this nonpartisan site that the National League has put out there and that we've refined for the second largest county in our state. I'm so proud of the work because we do have so many, especially in our primary. I'm sure Chris knows from talking elections on the radio, is that there's so many candidates here in Lake County. And it's a lot of work, but I'm really proud that we've built this and we're going to continue on and do the best we can. And just to go back to one thing you said real quick, this can also be sent to your, there's a lot of options through vote411.org. If you'd like to send the information to your phone so that you can review it before you go into your poll and cast your vote, there's that option too. So there's some things that you can do that are very different than other tools out there. It really is.
Yeah, and to expand on that, just to kind of go over what the user would see on their website, they type in their address, and then they can either view their full ballot, they can narrow it down by a certain party. But I really recommend view your whole ballot, and you will see for each race, side by side, the candidates. You can read the questions. You can see what they're all about. Then you can actually select which candidate you believe you will be voting for. Once you're all done with your ballot, you can either put your cell phone number in and text yourself that ballot, or you can email yourself that ballot. And as Sarah just mentioned, you can review that before you go into the polls, just as a refresher.
Do you think that this particular service, vote411.org, on the local basis, will help out, and certainly past this election coming up here in just a few weeks, but also in the ones ahead in 2020, and for that matter, too, any of the and we're liable to see many more of them in the future than we have, the public referenda votes, which will come up here. As school districts, particularly here in Lake County, are feeling the crunch because of the lifting of the property tax caps, and they're going to have to go to the voters in their particular school district, wherever it may be, and ask for help. We're going to say we're going to need a school tax referenda, which will call for an increase, and you're going to have to help us out because this is the only way we can be able to keep the services alive in this particular school district. Will you see this opportunity with the service to make it easier to understand these referenda questions? They're pretty obtuse. You know, they're just basically legal questions, mm-hmm. yep. and they don't get many explanations, and that's usually up to the superintendents of the specific school districts to go out there and do the walking and knocking on doors and holding a public meetings to explain to their particular voters why they're asking for help. Is this going to help out in many respects over time?
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up. In addition to the candidates, we do have public questions mm-hmm. on the vote411.org survey, and we did that in the primaries. We did have the school referendum questions on the website, so if you were within the school district that you would be voting for that public question for the referendum, you were able to review that information, and then we also took it one step further, and we put the contact information for that school corporation. So if you did have additional questions, you could reach out to, because those questions are very confusing for a lot of people, language. Because the language, it just doesn't make sense to a lot of people,
yeah.
you know?
It's, well, it's, as
it's
I said,
not something it's very, you're used to reading.
It's very legal,
it
you
is.
Know,
it's
which is it's written
legal.
By way of, you know, specifically in the yeah. statute that allows for the questions to be asked of voters. So.
Exactly, yeah. yeah. So that's why we put that school contact information, because the school corporations are very open to answering any questions that the voter would have about that referendum and what that money would be used for. So we do take that next step.
And that was, Chris, feedback that we got from not only our partnership, the league members and the executive board and us, the volunteers that we have through RISE, they said, what else, you know, what are things that you're still confused about that we need to enhance the site with? So we've really honed in on some things. Another thing is certain judges' races. Mm-hmm. It's hard to find out about people that are running for judge, the Supreme Court judges that are just nominated by the governor and
right.
things like that. How do you find out, you know, who to retain and things like that. So people were asking, how can I find out more, and is there more that you can do from the league and the RISE side to put this on Vote 411? So
now we're getting so close to this next municipal election coming up. Is there anything more that the league and RISE and others working on this project have to do, or do you just have to get the last of the data in and maintain it all through the next few weeks here, past up to and past election day?
So we will continue conducting outreach to the candidates. Just a little bit of more information about that. We really make it easy for the candidates to respond. Mm-hmm. So if a candidate is listening and you have not yet responded, please feel free to reach out to us, and we will resend you that information. But we do send a mail copy, so they can submit by paper. They can also scan and fax that back to me. We do send email reminders out to all the candidates that we have emails for, and then the wonderful phone calls. You know, we have 180 candidates on the ballot for the election this year, and we contact each and every candidate. We take our nonpartisan status very seriously, and we want to make sure that everyone has the same opportunity to submit their responses. So we will be continuing candidate outreach up until Election Day. They're welcome to submit up until Election Day.
Mm-hmm. And then there's also, we promote the site mm-hmm. on both of our social media sites and through our organizations. We're pushing this out because we want people to utilize it. Now we're reaching out to the candidates, but now it's time that people are, you know, they're early voting or they're getting ready to make their plans to go on November 5th. And so we want them to have that tool right in their phone or right on their computer so that they can do their research and make their decisions beforehand.
It's probably a little early to think about 2020, but I guess you have to be thinking about that too, if not the day after the election, but even a little before, like right now. To be ready, or at least if there are any changes that you have to make to be able to get ready for the next set of candidates who will be on the next set of ballots coming up, I would imagine.
Absolutely, yes. We are already having conversations about what needs to happen to make sure we are accurately prepared to be able to hold vote411.org for the 2020 elections.
Well, Sarah Ferraro and Terry Weems and Miranda Fishback, thank you for joining us to talk about the vote411.org project as it shows up locally, working through the agreements and support that you have together with the League of Women Voters of the Calumet area and of Rise Northwest Indiana and the Legacy Foundation, because they're all partners in all of this as well, too. Thank you for being with us to talk about this, and we'll let you get back to sorting through the data and getting the candidates' information in. And there's still a big pile of it, I'm sure, that has to be done. But in turn, it'll be out there available at vote411.org for people that want to check out. Thanks for being with us today to talk about it.
Thank you.
And you're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. A Northwest Indiana husband and wife business team have come up with a program that is helping beyond the business itself, quite literally. It helps on, a side business, but it's a very important side business, particularly here in Northwest Indiana. Sue and Ryan Mathis are the local owners of a company which is locally called Next Door Photos. And we can explain the business if they want to in more detail, but there's a certain aspect of the business that is not readily visible from looking at their website. You can find it. You have to look around a little bit. It's not hidden because they don't want people to know about it. It's because it's a very important and very personal part of the business and how we, in turn, are able to talk about it today. Sue and Ryan, thank you for both being with us today in the studio, and we appreciate you wanting to explain a little bit more about this. I guess you could even call it an auxiliary business to Next Door Photos. Sue, tell us a little bit about the idea behind wanting to help people who are suffering from human trafficking. It's a big problem here in Northwest Indiana. It may not be the most visible problem, but we've had people who are much more expert about this. In particular, we've had U.S. attorneys talk about it on the air, about the problem that Northwest Indiana faces because of our location and the problem that human trafficking is everywhere. It is not just in some big cities on the East Coast or the West Coast. It is everywhere.
Yeah, well, thank you for having us. So we we're approaching business differently, I guess, than some. We are a real estate photography company. So mm-hmm. We do real estate media and deliver a really high quality, incredible product to our clients. But we do it in a way that we're able to have impact and to have it globally. And as you mentioned, it's right here in Northwest Indiana. It's right next door to us, but it's also around the world. And so our heart is, how can we do business and how can we have an impact? And so at Next Door Photos, we have a team of individuals who have been rescued from human trafficking. And they've been rescued from situations where they are at high risk of exploitation. And so to be able to provide them with work that is sustainable, that gives them dignity, is really a privilege for us to do something locally that affects the world globally.
When you talk about on a global basis, and I know that if you look further onto the Photos Next Door website and find out more about it from that way, too, there are several countries that are involved in this issue, and it's not just here in the United States, I understand.
Right. So we have a Better Edits company in the Philippines. We're also growing to Nepal as well as Kenya. Our youngest son is adopted from Haiti, and Haiti is the second highest human slavery country in the world. And so I guess our heart as a husband and wife is, how can we impact individuals who are really being exploited, and how can we help give them dignity? And so this is a really incredible opportunity through business to be able to do this.
What have you learned in doing your research in this? And certainly, as you say, it's part of building the business as well. This is a bit of the business. But in finding out more about the Northwest Indiana aspect of it, who have you talked to? Where have you gotten information from that have been able to lead you to the people that need the help the most here within Northwest Indiana?
So that's an area that we probably need to do more research yet. Mm-hmm. I know the Safe Coalition is making a powerful impact in this region. And there's some different women's rescue homes that I've been in contact with through the years. But as far as directly connecting them with Next Door Photos, we haven't had an opportunity to do that because our business has not been quite set up that way yet.
Yeah.
But it's certainly our heart. How can we locally have an impact as well as globally?
If you will explain a little bit about what you do on a local basis when you are encountering people that are victims of human trafficking, how do you find out about these folks, and what do you get to do as part of what you do in the business to help bring them up to the next level, bring them back into society on a helpful and perhaps a more normal basis, I suppose?
Well, you're really challenging me here because, yes, as I said, locally, I don't feel like, we've been in business for 2 months.
Yeah.
Well, so we're young, we're babies.
So you have the mission, you have the goals, you're working in that direction, I suppose.
Exactly, just growing. So Next Door Photos is a company that is across the United States. There's several locations throughout the United States as well as Canada. And so because of that, we have the back end part of things for our editing company. And so locally, we're still researching how mm-hmm. can we, beyond the service that we're offering to the realtors and to builders in the area.
This is part of the learning process, you say. Are you getting help from some of the other representatives of the company that are out there, like you mentioned, across the country, in Canada and the like, finding out how they're doing, what they're doing, and trying to see if it's going to be adaptable to Northwest Indiana?
Yeah. So that's a great thing. We get to work with them closely because mm-hmm. we're all local owners. We all have just a passion for the area that we're in, but we have the same goal in mind too, to offer a really great product that has an impact.
Do you think there is an opportunity, or have you taken the opportunity, if it's there, to be able to work with local law enforcement, or at least ask them to find out if they have leads, if they have ways that they can help get information to you that in turn you can turn around into being able within the business dealing with the issue of human trafficking?
Well, I certainly think it's something that we could investigate and look further into, because it is happening in our law enforcement. I'm so grateful for them that they are moving forward, that they're recognizing the problem, that they're trying to stop this. And, to be able to end human slavery in our lifetime would be amazing.
What kind of statistics have you learned here in Northwest Indiana that seem to be the most alarming to both of you and kind of help bolster your efforts and make you more determined than ever that you want to be able to help out?
Well, I think being, the crossroads of Indiana, being right here where there's such a high percentage of people who are being trafficked, we can't turn the other way. So we have to think about what can we do?
Mm-hmm.
What can we do as individuals? How can we invest ourselves, invest all areas of our life in making an impact on others' lives?
I guess this is something that's a bit different than what the typical business would do. Obviously, businesses are for profit, for one way or the other, but you're talking about something that is not only building the business for profit for yourselves and for the future, but also the future of some human beings out there as well.
Exactly. It's like entrepreneurial missions, mm-hmm. really doing, having a heart that is reaching people. I love Jesus, and we want to live our lives beyond ourselves, beyond mm-hmm. who we are.
Well, Sue and Ryan, thank you very much, and the best of luck to you. This is you're just off on beginning this mission, literally.
Just getting started here.
And it's a lot of work to come here, but I'm sure that now if anyone interested in knowing at least right now how things stand, where can they find out?
They can go to southshore.nextdoorphotos.com.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our website. We're also on Facebook and growing in the area of social media as well, that they can follow us and hear more about our story as we go.
Search more on the website, and there's a section in the About tab, if I recall right, that will get you a little closer to finding out more specifically what we've been talking about today on the air.
So. Yeah, if they click on Be Certified, mm-hmm. That is our accountability standards that we have to live by. In order to know that we are providing those sustainable jobs as well as giving dignity locally as well as globally. So.
Well, Sue and Ryan, both, thank you very much for being with us. Sue and Ryan Mathis are the local owners of a business called Next Door Photos. And if you go on the website, the South Shore Next Door Photos, .com, you'll find out more information about what we've been talking about today. Thank you for being in with join us about that.
Thank you so much for having us.
You're listening to Regionally Speaking. It won't be long before we will start to see some developing work done in expanding on the South Shore Line, the two projects that are well publicized that we've talked about before here on Regionally Speaking, and talking with the folks with NICTI about this and other economic development organizations that are working with NICTI on the project. The Westlake Corridor project is one of the biggest, aside from the double tracking that the South Shore Line is getting underway as well, too, to expand the tracks for the commuter rail service through Lake County into LaPorte County even, and portions to the east as well. The Westlake Corridor project is a bit more involved, and it's just as important. And to find out more, we have with us Matt Moss, who is the vice president of FC Passion, if I'm pronouncing the company's name right, Matt. Passion, as well as Regnar Benson, are two companies based in Chicago that are going to be working together on this joint project that they're offering to NICTI to be able to get the Westlake Corridor project underway. And Mr. Moss, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thank you very much, Chris. It's a pleasure to be here.
Will you take a little time and tell us, explain to our listeners who may or may not be familiar with your businesses, your business that you work for and represent, and Regnar Benson, how you fit into the picture for being some of the people that may be very much involved in the actual project itself?
Sure. So FH Passion and Regnar Benson joint venture submitted a statement of qualifications to NICTI earlier in the year. We were a shortlisted firm, one of three shortlisted firms for this project, and we're right now in we're involved in the proposal phase and preparing our final proposal for NICTI that'll be submitted on December 6th.
So a
little bit about FH Passion. Yeah. We are an infrastructure firm in Chicago, and we work in Chicagoland regionally, and then we have offices throughout the country. But our primary focuses are infrastructure, transportation, and transit focus. Our joint venture partner, Regnar Benson, is a national leader in the rail industry. They have offices in Chicago. Their main office is in Rockford, Illinois, and they work throughout the Midwest and across the United States.
Do you have the opportunity working with the Benson firm on other projects that are similar to this, or since you kind of all specialize in one little area, but you all work together for the overall project?
Yes, Passion Regnar Benson worked together with their parent company, William Charles, and we do work with the Illinois Tollway. We were part of a joint venture team as well for the Illiana Expressway, both the Indiana segments and the Illinois segments before that project was shelved.
Mm-hmm. And many people are familiar with what the Westlake Corridor project is going to be like here, particularly in Lake County. What interested you all in both of your organizations with wanting to be involved in this particular project?
Well, this is a great project that fits Passion and Regnar Benson's business model. It's a combination of the 8 miles of ballasted track work, 31 bridges, track work and embankment, electrical systems, new substations, the new maintenance storage facility in Hammond, along with the four new stations at Munster Dyer, Munster Ridge Road, South Hammond near 173rd Street, and then the new Hammond Gateway Station. So this is a good blend of infrastructure and building construction, which we have experts in that field, and it's close to home for many of us. Many of us live in Northwest Indiana and commute to Chicago for work. So
you actually do get the opportunity actually to travel the South Shore Line often, many times every single day, to be able to come in, and you can kind of realize certainly this is what life on the commuter system is like, and then how can we improve it, and this is what it led up to apparently.
Correct.
What type of work gets done when you get together with another business and coming up with an idea, since you have businesses that may to some people be competing, but in turn you kind of all fit together because you have various qualities, various specialties to be sure. What do you put together when you come to an organization like NICTI? You tell them, hey, we'd like to be involved in this project.
Well, we've Passion and Regnar Benson have had a lot of planning sessions leading up to the to our submittal of the statement of qualifications and the RFP. And our lead designer is Jacobs, who performs significant engineering throughout the country, specializing in transit and transportation as well. And we just identified ourselves as a team that has complementary assets and that we'd be able to work well together and divide up some of the work and manage it as one.
Now, the reason that you all are getting together and coming forth to the public here is for another networking session, I suppose, in a way, for the public here in Northwest Indiana to learn more about the companies and about the project and the joint venture that you all are going to establish in the project. The next networking session, I guess, outreach session, if you wish to call it, for the joint venture, which is called Expanding Business Beyond the Lines, is coming up here on Thursday, October 24th. And I note there was a previous session on September 19th in Hammond. Can you tell us about what you talked about at that session and what folks came away learning about the businesses?
Sure. We did have the outreach event in Hammond in September, and we had over 60 interested firms and individuals come see us and talk to us about the different opportunities on this project. The opportunities are very very significant with different types of work. Sometimes you'll have a project that's only building construction or only civil and roadway construction or only bridge construction, and that makes it harder to give opportunities to everybody. But on a design build project of this scale with the various disciplines involved, we can really reach out to building trades, structures and civil trades, site work trades, and design trades, and we can really, we can really get the benefit of a lot of local interest, which we received. There were a lot of Northwest Indiana professional services firms and subcontractors that we haven't worked with, firms that we had heard of before, but never really engaged with. So that gave us an opportunity to meet those firms face to face and discuss what their capacity is and what their desired involvement in the project is, to find that best fit between our project approach and what the local businesses can offer. Mm-hmm.
So you're hoping this event on Thursday, this is going to happen in Dyer, is sort of a continuation of that event that happened in Hammond last month?
Exactly. So, you know, hopefully our first event created a little bit of a buzz in the marketplace, and hopefully we can continue to build on that and create some momentum and engage more firms as we get closer and closer to our submittal timeframe. And this doesn't really stop with Passion, Regner Benson, at this project. We've developed these contacts. We bid projects every single day of the week here in Chicago and in the southern suburbs and in Northwest Indiana. So we're looking to build partnerships, not just for this project, but a lot of projects going forward.
Well, certainly having this opportunity and a couple of networking sessions like that will give you that opportunity. Let me ask you, Mr. Moss, right now, since you're working on getting more information together, talking with more people and making more plans together, what kind of deadline do you have that you have to submit to NICTI as you want to get the actual project going?
Sure. Our deadline to submit our proposals to NICTI is December 6th. So we're looking to get subcontractor interest gauged and get them involved immediately so that we can have our cost proposals and some of our technical proposals, you know, really wrapped up in the middle of November, so we can, you know, dot all the I's and cross all the T's and be ready to submit our proposal on December 6th.
Now, this session coming up on Thursday, October 24th, which, as we mentioned before, is entitled Expanding Business Beyond the Lines. This second of the two outreach events for this joint venture is going to be held at the Plum Creek Center, which is at Elmer Miller Park. It's in Dyer. If you're not familiar where the Plum Creek Center is, it's along Plum Creek. It's right immediately to the south of the Dyer Town Hall. So as you come down to Hart Street and then pull into Schulte Street, you'll be in the area there, and you'll see where the Plum Creek Center is. It's not very far away from all that. If anyone, a business or a community organization that feels they might be able to help, would like to know more and like to be involved in this, how can they do so?
They could go to our website. We have a project-specific website established. It's fhp-rb.com, and that will provide information on this outreach event and also other opportunities, along with contact information for our estimating and contract compliance. There's also an email address, westlakecorridor@fhpassion.com, and if any interested parties send an email to that account, then it'll get distributed internally, and we'll be able to have the appropriate folks respond to that.
Well, Mr. Moss, it sounds like that not only from the business standpoint, from the professional standpoint as planners and constructors, but that you really all are very excited about wanting to be involved in this Westlake Corridor project that's being offered up here, and turning your information to NCTE to be part of this as well. So it's an opportunity to be actually a part of Northwest Indiana's commuter future.
We would love to be a part of this one, and we're excited to submit our proposal and hopefully get going on it in early 2020.
Well, Mr. Moss, thank you for being with us today and talking about the project. And again, this Expanding Business Beyond the Lines, this outreach event that's coming up on Thursday, October 24th. It begins at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's going to be held at the Plum Creek Center, which is at Elmer Miller Park in Dyer. And you can find out more by the information on the website, as Mr. Moss just mentioned. Thank you for being with us to talk about your company's, the joint venture that you're involved in, and your proposal that you're making to NCTE to do work on the Westlake Corridor project. Thanks for being with us today about it.
Thank you very much, Chris. I appreciate the opportunity.
You're welcome. Matt Moss is the vice president of FH Passion, which is representing, in this case, Chicago-based construction companies, FH Passion and Regner Benson. They're interested in putting together a joint venture proposal to the South Shore Line's leadership for the Westlake Corridor project. You're listening to Regionally Speaking. The Gary Sanitary District released last Wednesday what is being called an invitation to bid on site work for the proposed Hard Rock Casino in Gary, which, of course, is to be built at I-80-94 and Burr Street. The bids were due on Thursday, the 17th. And last week, Tammy Davis, the district's Director of Compliance and Policy Engagement, talked with Lakeshore Public Radio Sharon Jackson about the timeline that's set up right now for the project. Here's the conversation.
Can you tell me about the invitation to bid on the Hard Rock Casino Gary and where that's at? You guys just sent out those bids, or the invitations, rather?
Yes. Yeah, so I just received this morning the bid package number 4 that Hard Rock Casino has issued the invitation to bid for site fill work.
And what is site fill work?
Well, site fill, I don't know all the technical details of it, but basically, as the site is being prepared for new construction, there's some excavation that needs to take place, and they have to remove some debris and some dirt and then fill it back in. That's probably as technical as I can get.
Can you go through any dates with us, how this is going to go?
Sure. I can provide you what we have, and the bids are due tomorrow, which is Thursday, October the 17th. They, being TN Company, they are the builders that have been awarded the contract with Hard Rock Casino to manage the construction of the facility. And they anticipate making a contract award on Monday, October the 21st. Site work will start somewhere around October the 28th. And they are looking to have most of all the backfill and things completed by early next year.
Does this also include the take into consideration the inclusion of people from Gary into getting on, hired on to do some of this work?
Well, there is a diversity contract goal that has been established for the project. They are looking to achieve 40% minority business utilization, 10% coming from women-owned business, and 5% coming from veteran-owned businesses. And as always, we want to maximize the inclusion of local and diverse workers.
So when you say they are looking to, you're talking about the Hard Rock?
TN Ward. So TN Ward, and I don't want to speak on their behalf, but TN Ward is the construction management firm that has been contracted by Hard Rock to manage the bidding process for the new facility.
All right. Well, is there anything else that you can tell me that maybe I haven't asked you about?
We just want to make sure that we get as many local construction companies, minority, women-owned, veteran, disadvantaged businesses to apply. And if there are any companies that would like to make sure that they at least get on my procurement notification list, they can email me at Tammy, T-A-M-M-I, at GarySan, G-A-R-Y-S-A-N, as in Nancy.com. And as I am made aware of bidding opportunities, I'll make sure that that gets out.
So when did this bidding opportunity come about?
Well, I actually just got it in my hands today, this morning. And as soon as I got it, I immediately started sending it out to all of the businesses in my database because they are looking to receive bids tomorrow. So I wanted to make sure that it got out to as much of the public as I could get it out to.
Is it normal for them to want the have the due date for the bids set so quickly, such a quick turnover like that?
Not normally. So they may have reached out to some other contractor associations that are in this area. They may, and when I say they, I mean T and Ward or Hard Rock, they may have reached out to other associations, but it didn't reach me until this morning.
Okay, because it seems, to get a bid out, I mean, that seems like that would be something that would take a long time. It's kind of like they're only getting one day to do it?
Well, I think that from the time that I received it this morning, businesses, this might be their first time being made aware of it. But it looks like from the actual bid itself, at the bid document, it looks like it was put together sometime around October 4th. But again, TN Ward may have reached out to other contractor associations. I'm not sure. And I didn't even have time to do that type of background checking. I just wanted to make sure, you know, that it got out, you know, because it is such a quick turnaround. But normally there is a longer lead time.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
That's Lakeshore Public Radio's Sharon Jackson speaking with Tammy Davis of the Gary Sanitary District. Attorney General Curtis Hill will defend his law license at a disciplinary hearing that gets underway today. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports that the week-long proceeding comes from the allegations that he groped four women last year.
A state lawmaker and three legislative staffers say Curtis Hill inappropriately touched them at a party in March 2018. A special prosecutor declined to bring charges, but the state's legal disciplinary commission filed a complaint, arguing Hill's alleged actions, as well as his behavior after the accusations became public, violate the state's rules of conduct for attorneys. Hill denies he inappropriately touched anyone. The disciplinary hearing before former Supreme Court Justice Myra Selby is set to take a full week, with about two dozen witnesses expected to testify. No decision will be made at the conclusion of the hearing, however. That comes later, from the state Supreme Court, based in part on a recommendation Selby will deliver in the coming weeks. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
Local UAW leaders are returning from Detroit to get their members ready for a vote on a tentative agreement with General Motors. And as Samantha Horton tells us, some workers are worried that the proposal cannot prevent any future plant closures.
At UAW Local 2209 Union Hall, it's still business as usual with members coming and going from the picket line as the strike will continue until a contract is ratified. GM recently closed a plant in Lordstown, Ohio, that won't be reopened under the current proposal. Combined with the auto company's electric vehicle plans, some UAW members worry about the future of their jobs. Local union president Holly Murphy says efforts have been made to retain jobs, but contracts can only do so much.
No matter as much as we write in a contract, sometimes, you know, we're not able to keep all that, just like what happened to Lordstown. And many of us have come from plants that they've closed. So as much as you want to hold on to that, it's not always a, you know, a promise or a guarantee.
Murphy says a tentative agreement does provide temporary workers a path to permanent employment, a much needed improvement. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Samantha Horton.
School counseling services, teacher training, the governance of education in Indiana could all be changing in 2020. And Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jeannie Lindsay tells us about a summer study group that wrapped up its work and is turning in its recommendations for lawmakers to consider next year.
One recommendation says counselors and career coaches should be split into separate categories. It says the state should send money to the Department of Workforce Development if schools need funding to support career coaching for every student, including an elementary school. The group also wants to revive the state's education roundtable under a new name, the Roundtable for Lifelong Learning. The idea is to unify policymaking from early education all the way to higher ed with an emphasis on workforce needs. The committee also wants the State Department of Education to take charge of consolidating teacher trainings, like how trainings for different subjects are offered and when. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
Time once again for Eye on the Arts, and here's John Kane with South Shore Arts.
Joining me for this edition of Eye on the Arts is Lou T-Rock, who is the director of Interwoven Expressions. And welcome back, Lou.
Well, thank you very much.
You're one of our guests that we have here every year in the autumn as the holidays approach and certain activities come up, and they help people celebrate at this time of year. And Interwoven Expressions, you've been here to tell us about the activity many times, but when did it actually start?
It started 35 years ago.
Oh, gosh.
Yes.
We haven't been together that many times.
No. But it's a show that is dedicated to fiber, anything that can be made with fiber. I don't care how you do it. I don't care if you weave, knit, crochet, dye, felt, tat, whatever. Whatever you do, it has to be done with fiber.
Mm-hmm.
And this has evolved into, well, in 1 8-hour day, we will do over $25,000 worth of sales.
That's fantastic. You have good marketing.
I hope so. Artists come from Michigan, Indiana, Illinois. You have to live in a state that borders our Lake Michigan in order to even apply. Mm-hmm. It's a juried show. Only the best to get in. I have artists coming from Traverse City, Michigan, from Grand Rapids, mm-hmm. Kalamazoo, Three Rivers, Michigan, Chicago, Indianapolis, Lafayette, South Bend, and all of Northwest Indiana. When you walk into the Sand Creek Ballroom, it's an explosion of color. It's like color on steroids. We have people who walk in and go, wow. And they walk all the way around the ballroom once just to get acclimated to mm-hmm. all the color. And then they start shopping.
That is so cool. I think I love hearing your excitement talking about it, your enthusiasm for it. How many artists will be represented in the show?
We'll have 23 artists this year.
And is that about the typical number that you have?
Our number, yes, that's the typical number. We can only put so many artists with all of their mm-hmm. sales items into the Sand Creek Ballroom. And Sand Creek is a wonderful host. They bend over backwards for us. And it's a really elegant place to be.
Mm-hmm.
They open up their grill room
mm-hmm.
to our Interwoven customers. So we tell people, come on out for the day, shop. Go and have lunch in the grill room and have a glass of wine with your lunch.
Oh, yes.
And then go back and shop for the things that you missed the first time around.
The glass of wine, I'm sure, helps to stimulate sales.
Hey, it works wonderfully.
Now, did you actually start Interwoven Expressions yourself?
No. A friend of mine went to a show in Kalamazoo, the Kalamazoo Weavers Show.
Okay.
And she came back to the Doonland Weavers Guild mm-hmm. and said, why can't we do something like that? So that's where it started. But then we, after a few years, we realized that this for-profit event would jeopardize the not-for-profit status of the Doonland Weavers Guild, so we separated.
I see.
And then we branched out and said, any kind of fiber. And so that's when we had knitters, crocheters, felters, even basket makers and handmade paper, because baskets are made of reed, which is fiber, mm-hmm. and paper is fiber. It just has to be fiber.
What do you do yourself as a fiber artist?
I'm a weaver.
So you're a traditionalist.
Oh, yes.
And what kinds of things will you have on display for sale?
I do garments.
Okay.
Yeah, clothing. So.
And you do well every year with it, I bet.
Well, I don't do as well as I would love to, but I'm busy doing administrative things. There are some weavers that have things there that just blow my mind. They're so exciting, color-wise.
Yeah.
You just want to pet them. They're so wonderful.
So the date this year is?
November 9th.
Okay.
Sand Creek Country Club, 9 to 5.
And it's a full, you can spend the day.
Oh, definitely. Spend the day, have lunch at, like I said, at the grill room.
Yeah.
And then come and shop some more.
That sounds fantastic. Well, good luck, Lou. I wish you much success and keep up all the good weaving work.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And thank you for listening. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Eye on the Arts.
And you can find more Eye on the Arts conversations, including this one, on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Coming up tomorrow, we have a Best of Regionally Speaking program for you, and we hope you'll join us for that.